Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Happy President's Cup week. Recording this on Wednesday evening, just prior to the start of Thursday four-ball matches here at Royal Montreal. Rex, you've been on site since Monday. I got into town on Tuesday. How is your President's Cup week going? What are your initial impressions so far?
Got into town late Tuesday, rough around the edges. How you feeling?
Certainly better than if we had done this podcast on Tuesday. As mentioned, the previous podcast, the reason we have not done a podcast in about a week and a half is that I was in Buffalo for the Bills-Jags Monday Night Football game. Did not get much sleep. My liver was hurting. My voice was hoarse. I'm battling some sort of sinus congestion and headache. So yes, we are recording this on Wednesday for a reason. Thank you for your understanding.
To watch a bad football game, don't forget that.
Yes, an absolute shellacking in which I hope that everyone soon gets fired, but that's neither here nor there.
I'm looking forward to this week. It's been a minute. You and I have taken off about 2 weeks. You have a mute button for that. Next time you do it, it's going to be a $5 fine. It's been 2 weeks, so we're a little out of practice. We apologize, but it's a big week. You and I both are looking forward to this. And you and I both were on the early live from today, so we spent 3 hours waiting for those pairings, waiting for the announcements, waiting to see what both captains rolled out. And honestly, you spent the morning trying to wrap yourself into a pretzel, trying to convince yourself that this time around, this is it. This is the magic time for the internationals to win this. For the first time in some of those players on the international team's lifetime, somehow they're going to pull off an upset. Tell me how you got to that point.
I mean, this is exactly why you can't have 2 or 3 months to do anything, because you look at so much roster construction. You overanalyze the captain's picks, who isn't here, who should be here. You look at analytics and course fit for the golf course. You look at potential pairings and who would work well together. Like you could basically convince yourself of anything. Right. Like you could convince me that the Americans are going to win by 6 points. And you could convince me, as I at least convinced myself as of about noon Eastern time on Wednesday, that the internationals could win this one. Why I do think this could be different, Rex, is I think multifaceted. One, you look at the Canadian crowd that we're expecting at Royal Montreal. And look, Thursday is supposed to be miserable weather. It's supposed to rain like an inch. It's going to be damp and cold. But like, we're still expecting tens of thousands of hardy Canadians to be out on this golf course. For the first time, it feels like they're going to have a significant home course advantage, right? Like, you have three Canadians on the team. You have a Canadian in Mike Weir, who's the captain, who's sort of idolized and a national hero in these parts. I think it is imperative that the internationals take advantage of their most successful format, which is four balls play. Otherwise, best ball, everyone's playing their own ball. That's on Thursday. That's the format they've had the most success. Otherwise, you're going to be looking potentially at another American steamrolling. If there is a scenario where the Americans go 4-1, even 3-2, I would consider a massive victory for the Americans in this format on Thursday with the hostile crowd and those conditions. I think they're off and rolling, and it could potentially be demoralizing, like one of those here we go again. But I don't think that's going to happen, and that's why I think this time is going to be different.
I'm going to agree with you on the front that this is the 12th man. And of all the President's Cup I've covered, and it was interesting, you were on the desk today with Nota Begay. I was on the desk yesterday with Nota Begay. He and I were rookies at the same President's Cup many, many moons ago. And I am struck by the idea that this is the first time that I do feel like that the international side has a true home court advantage. And by that, I mean, and even Jason Day sort of addressed this yesterday, in Royal Melbourne, which has been to a couple of times, it's more of a curiosity. The fans are there almost as much to see Tiger Woods and the Americans play as much as they are to see Jason Day and Adam Scott from Australia. Even when it was in South Korea, you got it. It felt like more of a curiosity. It didn't feel like a home game. This is not Georgia playing in Athens. This time it does feel different because of the fact it's been here before. It's a semi-familiar venue. However, it's those three Canadians that he has on the team. And it's Mike Weir sort of steering the ship. And it's going back to 2007. And there's a generation of Canadian golfers who have that image of him playing Tiger Woods on Sunday. Match is over. It's not close. They have no chance of winning, but that made it an exciting thing that people remember around here. And that's a seminal moment that's sort of drilled into a generation of Canadian golfers. I think you're right on that front. Where I struggle with this is still just the basic facts. And don't get me wrong. I'm not being an American homer here. I am not also being...
You wore, whoever, You wore a blue coat.
I wore a blue
on the
coat
set yesterday.
Because that's that was Brad Faxon, who, by the way, probably let a little bit too much out. If you want to go back and watch that, probably said some quiet things out loud. If you're being honest, when it comes to why he wore the blue coat yesterday and he wore the international coat today. Anyway, I was wearing a blue raincoat that's Golf Channel issued. I'm not saying this because I'm a homer for the United States. I'm saying this because of just the facts in front of me. And I agree with you. Give me 3 months and we can tie ourselves in knots and come up with a scenario. And there is a scenario where the internationals win. But you can't ignore the facts. The last time the internationals won this, Tom Kim wasn't alive. He hadn't been born yet. There's two players on the international team that were infants. It's been a really, really long time. And if you look at just these teams on paper, the average ranking of the American team is 12th in the world. The average ranking for the international team is 33rd in the world. It's all right there in front of you. And I feel like Mike Weir, his team, going back all the way to Ernie Els and Nick Price, have created a scenario where you can see progress. You can see the international team make a game of it. And that, to me, is still a really good scenario this week. But then winning, that is a step too far for me, man.
And look, I think the time for silver linings or consolation prizes or, you know, small steps or progress is probably long past, right? Like, if you haven't won since 1998, no one really wants to hear, oh yeah, we're getting closer. Like, that's not a very good storyline. However, along those lines, right, you look back in 2015, that result came down to the very last match on the golf course in Korea. You look at 2019, the internationals led after the first day. They led after the second day. They led by 2 points heading into the singles format, the first time they've done that in a very long time. At least in those road games, yes, they have gotten closer. Yes, they have been as close as they have been towards making this an actual match. That's why I go back to how important Thursday four balls are. You look at what the internationals have done historically at home in better ball, 39.5 to 21.5. They have to get off to a good start to get into to sort of jump out to the lead, which they've done just once in the last 8 cups, puts more pressure on the Americans. And we're going to get to the Americans in a second and why I think they're probably a little bit more top heavy than we've seen in recent years. Get the home crowd behind you. And then you sort of can play from the front foot, as opposed to being defensive, as opposed to sort of shifting into that old mentality of, oh, here it goes again. We're really up against it, against a pretty fearsome team.
And we did have a fun conversation today on Live From, and the idea about who's going to be the dog on that team. And I did have a lot of fun with you on that. However, I think on the international side, you can come up with a couple of players who have some heart and soul to them. I think Minwoo Lee was the guy you went to. I went to Tom Kim, because not only do you have to have that dog in you, but you have to go out on the course and you have to prove it. You've got to go out there and fist pump and make the putts. Those two things go hand in hand. I keep going back to the idea, though, the two players that the international side really needs to be dogs this week, Hideki Matsuyama and Adam Scott, have never done it before. And I'd like to see it this time around. I want to see parity. I'm not quite the Golf Week writer who asked Jim Furyk if is it better if you lose? No one wants to see that, but it has to be close. And I think we're inching closer to that. I'm just not quite sure we're there. Because as you pointed out, the American team does seem top heavy, and we're going to do the sports radio thing in a second where we sort of go down the pairings and dissect them a little bit. It looks like Jim Furyk clearly came in with a plan. I'm just not quite sure what the master plan is from here. He split up some pairings. We probably thought we're going to end up being together. He put some guys together we probably weren't anticipating. It's going to be a fun Thursday. I will say that.
I mean, Jim Furyk, we talked about this after the captain's picks were announced a couple of weeks ago. He seems to be like willing to take some smoke. And he's not shying away from controversy. I think two of his captain's picks were controversial, and Keegan Bradley, who was an assistant captain, won the BMW against 50 players at altitude when he had not had a top 20 finish in 8 prior starts. You put him on the team as opposed to Billy Horschel, who gives you the exact same thing, that just only with better form. He goes back to Max Homa, who has not virtually done anything since the Wells Fargo Championship, struggling with his swing outside the top 100 off the tee, outside the top 100 in putting. Regardless of what his record is in these last 2 cups, 7-1-1, he clearly is not in form. He clearly is not the top 10 player that he has been over the past couple of years. That is in the past. But Jim Furyk has now sort of garnered some attention and some controversy with that. But you mentioned then blowing up some of the established pairings with Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele, Scotty Scheffler and Sam Burns. We'll get into that. I didn't think that was too controversial for him to do on Thursday. But he does seem to be inviting Rex, or at least opening the door for, huh, you know, this American team is very top heavy with Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa. You have some question marks at the back end of a lineup. You're playing a first true road game in a very long time if you are the American team. You probably have a little bit of a leadership vacuum. No Tiger, no Phil, no Justin Thomas, no Jordan Spieth. Like, who's going to step up in that team room if you do have a critical moment? Like, it really would not surprise me if the Americans lose. I'm not saying they will. We'll get to predictions at the end of this podcast, but he does seem to be opening the door for certainly some second guessing, but also for players not to be in position to perform their best this week.
Well, and I did this report earlier today, and I talked to one member of Team USA who said the message this week has been very clear, quote unquote, no surprises. And this goes back to last year's Ryder Cup, where maybe through no fault of his own, Zach Johnson had to make some changes to what he planned on doing as far as pairings go. And you ended up with some players who weren't prepared to play together. Now, you would think that would be easy, but there is a mental element to this, knowing I'm coming into this week and you and I are going to be paired together on day one in four ball. You sort of wrap your mind around that. And I think that threw guys for a bit of a loop. It was clear Furyk showed up to that press conference today to announce those lineups with a obvious blueprint. He knew exactly what he was going to do.
Took him 10 seconds.
The one time there was a pause, it seemed like it was almost by design, where they almost wanted to let the air out of the room. Even that seemed like it was built into the blueprint. All right, let's give it a beat. Let's sit here and whisper for a minute, make people think we're talking, and then dive right back in to what we intended to do. I will say there was the most interesting part from those pairings today going into tomorrow was the idea of sitting Max Homa and Brian Harman. As you pointed out, Max Homa was clearly a controversial pick as a captain's pick for all the reasons you pointed out. He's not doing the one thing you really need to do well on this golf course, drive the ball well. He's not putting well. He's not hitting his irons well. Watching him the last two or three days, it doesn't look like he's entirely comfortable in the situation. Him and Brian Harman are going to end up paired together. They were a lone bright spot for the United States last year in Rome. For them to leave them out of the first day four ball session, which is by far the easier of the sessions, if you're going to ease someone in to a match who isn't playing very well, it's much easier to do it in four ball than in his alternate shot. So you're assuming that Harman and Homan are going to go out Friday in the alternate shot session. You're putting them in a position where suddenly there's so much pressure for Homan to find a fairway. Suddenly there's so much pressure for him to make a putt. All the things that he hasn't done this year, that to me is curious.
It is curious. We've hinted at this enough. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already know the pairings by now. Let's go match by match, Rex, about what Furyk and Mike Weir were thinking and who you would potentially give the edge to. Match one. And if I knew what I was doing technologically, we could have graphics and they could all be very fancy and very formal. Match one is going to be Xander Schauffele and Tony Finau versus Jason Day and Ben Ahn. What do you think about that leadoff match for this President's Cup?
For the American side, I will say I'm impressed because I think you can pair Xander with everyone. And we talked about this a little bit so far this week.
But he hasn't, Rex. Historically, he has just sort of been partnered with Patrick Cantlay. I know they split up last year in Rome. Xander was not playing his best. Neither player was feeling his best. And there was sort of a makeshift moment that had to happen midway through that Ryder Cup when Xander Schauffele played with Kyle Morikawa once. Patrick Cantlay had that memorable partnership with Wyndham Clark on Saturday when all the hats were going, and Patrick Cantlay did his thing over the last four holes to win that match. But historically, this has been a proven pairing for the Americans, and then they broke them up.
And I don't mind that. Like, this one, you're going to color outside the lines. I would still expect Xander and Patrick to end up together. They're obviously best friends. This goes back to the 2019 President's Cup when Fred Couples, who was an assistant captain at the time, talked Tiger into putting them together. And they've turned into a really good pairing. All that being said, Xander is the dog on the U.S. team. Without Justin Thomas, as you pointed out, Xander's going to be the guy that gets into people's faces. Jim Furyk said as much on Monday night on Live From. He said he doesn't say much when we have a microphone in front of him. He doesn't say much in public, but behind closed doors, it's clear he's a leader of that room. And we've seen Tony Finau perform really, really well in the matches. Go all the way back to Paris when he played really well with Brooks Koepka. I'm really good with that. I think the more interesting thing is on the international side there. Because again, Jason Day and Adam Scott, I would almost put right next to each other as far as just disappointing. Everything they've done in this event is just disappointing. They have no highlight moments. They have nothing you're going to hang your hat on and say, yes, this is when they made their President's Cup moment. This has got to be maybe not Jason's week, but certainly Adam's week. And I think Ben Ahn is a solid pairing for Jason Day, but I'm still going to need to see the production.
Yeah, Jason Day, 5'11" and 4" in his career. I thought he was very interesting, Rex, on Tuesday in his press conference, sort of talking about his evolution and his thought process in these matches historically. He looked back to 2015 in career. He was the number one player in the world. He just won a major championship. He should have been the alpha for the internationals. Instead, he sort of looked around and thought, you know, if these guys don't care, why do I particularly care? And he just sort of went through the motions, earned a half point in what was a very narrow loss for the internationals. They certainly could have used their alpha and their top dog to show up. I think this is essentially Mike Weir saying to Jason Day, okay, you bought in. You want to be a part of this team. You're motivated now. You see how bad the guys want it. You want it now too. The Olympics sort of quote-unquote opened your eyes to what it meant to play for something more than yourself. Okay, go out there and prove it. I'm going to put you in the very first match against the second best player on the PGA Tour this season in Xander Schauffele. And I'm with you. I love the move, actually, by Jim Furyk to put Xander Schauffele out with someone else. It seems like he's really coming to his own as a person, as a player this year. With his elevated stature in the game, with his major championship experience, with the now well-roundedness of his game, you're right. You can be stronger in your American lineup by splitting those two up and letting Xander Schauffele even buoy a player who, I guess if you're Tony Finau, you may be a great iron player, struggles with his putter. I think this pairing could free him up. I think the Americans are going to win that first match.
And to be clear, I don't think either captain won or lost today. I think what you ended up with is a scenario where Jason Day in the first group, Adam Scott in the second group. Though that's a single, I think, from Mike Weir to those two players specifically. Like, it's your time to finally get it done. The internationals aren't going to be able to win if one of you two doesn't produce, and you haven't done it up to this point. So you send them out. I actually love what Mike did in that second pairing, sending Adam Scott out with Minwoo Lee, because Minwoo Lee has so much energy, and he's a young player, and that's kind of been Adam Scott's cross to bear in these matches, where he's a veteran. You always want to send a young player out that didn't have experience. And I think that's actually kind of drug him down a little bit. This seems the opposite. It seems as if he's almost trying to do what Phil Mickelson did all those years, where he pulled on the young player's energy. He did it with Anthony Kim that year. He did it with Keegan Bradley. If he can somehow spark something, and you can see very clearly what Mike Weir is trying to do here, I think it could be special. On the American side in that second group, it's Colin Morikawa and Sahith Theegala. Love that one, too. You kind of have two California guys. You're sending them out. They're relaxed. I think they play a different style of game, but I still think they can fit together. Sahith talked about this yesterday. He's not really a point A to point B guy. He's going to play a little speed-like is the way he described it. And then you have Morikawa. That's going to be point A to point B. Give you a lot of par looks. Give you a lot of birdie looks. He's not going to make worse than par. I think that's a good four-ball pairing.
We love this. We love this. We love this. This is the sort of critical, hard-hitting analysis that people are coming.
I'm getting to the part I don't like. Podcast. Trust me, we're inching to the parts I don't like.
We had a very long and spirited conversation about Adam Scott on the Live From Desk on Wednesday. And I thought it was very interesting because Adam Scott has been plagued, Rex, by being the standout veteran on what is historically a very weak team, right? And when you are in that position, you sort of have to play three different roles. You're going to have to sort of handhold or babysit the rookies. You're going to have to sort of pick up a player because of the well-rounded nature of Adam Scott's game that maybe is lacking in a certain area. Or maybe you're going to have to be paired with sort of a misfit or someone who's had a really hard time finding a partner, a la Hideki Matsuyama. I wish I had made the comparison that you just did with Phil Mickelson. So that's exactly right. That is exactly what Mike Weir is trying to do. He is trying to sort of infuse that youthful exuberance and energy into Adam Scott and to help bring out his best. Look, Adam Scott has been playing phenomenal golf over his past couple months. I think he's a player that Mike Weir can now count on playing at least four matches in probably five. I do think, however, he's going to have his work cut out for him in that second match. Kyle Morikawa is not going to give you anything. He's going to be hitting fairways and greens all day. Sahith is a little bit of a roller coaster. You don't know quite what you're going to get, but that's exactly what you want in four balls. If you're going to make five or six birdies, it's okay. You can offset the bogeys or worse for him trying to be, as you said, a Spieth-like. So I think that one is very evenly matched as well. This, I think, caught me by surprise. And then sort of looking back at it, I love it. Scottie Scheffler and Russell Henley will be together for the very first time against Sungjae Im and Tom Kim. Four great players, four players who have performed well over the past couple of months. Scotty Scheffler, obviously, for the past 3 years. What did you make of the decision to put Scotty with Russell Henley as opposed to Sam Burns, and how do you think it'll play, how do you think it'll pan out?
As soon as you said on live from you, I think you referenced this as a statistician's dream. I immediately went to my laptop and started punching in some numbers. And here's what I came up with. Russell Henley is essentially just a less shiny version of Scotty Scheffler when you look at it statistically. And by that, I mean, this year on tour, he – go ahead. You had a line? You had a comeback for that?
No. No, right, I think you're basically saying he's worse. He's a worse version of Scotty Scheffler.
He's a working man, Scotty Scheffler. I don't know another way of putting it. Like, he's not Scotty Scheffler, or he would be world number one or thereabouts. But he's still really good in almost every aspect of the game, specifically the aspects that are going to come in handy this week. Top 35 this season, tee to green. Top 35 around the green. Top 35 putting. Everything you need to do in this particular event, especially when you have that partner. Imagine a scenario where you, and again, we're going to get to the parts that we don't like, but this one, I'm with you. I really liked it. I don't know. And again, this is sort of the captains trying to match each other. I'm not quite sure I would have put Tom Kim in this situation where all the emotion in the world isn't going to hold up to that juggernaut. So I feel like maybe this is where Mike Weir whiffed a little bit.
Yeah, I would have put Sungjae Im with Hideki Matsuyama. We'll get to that in a second. I think this has to be sort of an interesting match for Tom Kim as well. He idolizes Scotty Scheffler. It's been sort of a big brother, a little brother situation. You saw how that played out at the Travelers Championship. I think that could potentially be awkward for him as well. The reason why I like that Scheffler-Henley pairing is that you look at what those two players do well in particular. They hit the center of the club face repeatedly. They will be hitting 15 and 16 greens in regulation. That just puts so much pressure on your opponent. And I know Sungjae Im can do it too. To me, the X factor in that match is going to be Tom Kim. He has not played since Memphis and sort of that late collapse at the playoff opener in which he did not make the top 50. What has he been doing over the past 5 or 6 weeks? Basically tweaking his putting. He finally has his golf swing in a position in which he really likes it. He's changed basically everything with his putting, including his technique and his setup position. This is not the week. It sort of reminds me of Scotty last year at the Ryder Cup. He just started working with Phil Ken. This is not the week that you'll sort of want to be tinkering with that, a little bit unsure of how you're going to get the ball in the hole. I like Scotty and Scheffler. I do think actually Russell Henley will be a revelation in these President's Cup matches.
You're such a betting guy. I would be curious. Between that Russell Henley, Scotty Scheffler group, I would say best ball. The over-under is going to be 18 greens in regulation and 14 fairways. You taking that?
In other words, at least one of them is going to hit
every green, every fairway,
and every hole. Yeah, I mean, I would think that's going to be, now with the weather coming in, I think it's a little dicey. Like, I would expect 6 or 7 birdies with probably very few mistakes. Like, Russell Henley has been mentioned repeatedly by his teammates. It's sort of been eye-opening this week, just how flush he hits the golf ball. He's filled it up on numerous occasions on the PGA Tour, not afraid to go low and not afraid to make a lot of birdies. Again, I like Russell Henley this week to sort of be the unsung hero for the Americans. How about match 4, Rex? Wyndham Clark and Keegan Bradley versus Taylor Pendrith, finally getting a Canadian in the lineup, and Christian Bezuidenhout.
If I was being brief, I would say only mid. Because in this particular scenario, you can only sit 2 players. Like, 10 guys have to play on the first 2 days. That's just the way it works out. And I've already explained why on Jim Furyk's side, it just made sense to sit Max Homa and Brian Harman, at least from his perspective. So Wyndham Clark, who has not had a great second half of the season, but still qualified for the team. And Keegan Bradley, who we can sit here, as you pointed out, is probably at least maybe, I'm not going to say controversial. Maybe I'll go halfway, semi-controversial, simply because you probably could have picked someone else, but because he was going to be next year's Ryder Cup captain, there was an idea that maybe you throw him in the mix. And I'm also on the same side on Mike Weir's side. Why did he wait until the fourth group to send the first Canadian out? We've talked about how important the 13th man is going to be this week. So essentially, we are an hour into play before they can really cheer for the first homegrown hero. So that one surprises me. I thought Nota Begay brought up a good point on Live From when this is brought up. You want to get the crowd involved. You also want to put the player in the best possible position. And maybe that's the fourth group. Maybe that's with Christian Bezuidenhout. I don't know. I don't like either one of these, but you had to put somebody in that fourth group.
Don't like either one of these, but someone has to play. I made the point on Live From Rex that, like, Keegan Bradley and Christian Bezuidenhout were two players I thought would be sitting on Thursday, and yet you're not putting them in the four balls. Keegan Bradley does not make a lot of birdies. He's out of the top 100 in strokes gained putting. He's such a great driver of the golf ball that I'd love to see him in foursomes play, alternate shot, and putting him in putting his partner in position in which he could attack. I would quibble a bit with your characterization of Wyndham Clark. Poor, to me, sort of spring, early summer, post-US Open. He has certainly been trending in the right direction. He has the game for four balls as well. Can be erratic, can be very hot. I would expect him to make a bunch of birdies. Taylor Pendrith, having the year of his life on the PGA Tour, won his first event, had seven other top 10 finishes. Christian Bezaden, now I would not have played in four balls. A short hitter. The golf course is going to be playing very slow, very long, very wet. That is not the player that I would be sending out. I do like the Americans in that one, if only slightly. And how about the anchor match, Rex? Another Canadian will be going out with Corey Connors, looking to redeem himself from an 0-4 performance at Quail Hollow. He'll be partnered with Hideki Matsuyama, the number one qualifier on the international side. They'll be taking on Patrick Cantlay and Sam Burns. First time those two players have been paired together. What do you think?
I think this was a statement by both captains. And by that, I mean, we just brought up the fact that Mike Weir and the internationals need to have good veteran play. And that's going to start with Adam Scott, who was in the leadoff match. I'm sorry, in the second match going off, and Hideki Matsuyama in the anchor match. As you pointed out, they have to come out ahead on Thursday if they're going to have any chance at all to win this match. So I think both of those players were sent a message that, all right, this is your time to shine. I will say it was curious to put Patrick Cantlay with Sam Burns. I'm not against breaking up Patrick Cantlay and Xander, even though they make such a good pairing. Sam is playing really well. I guess my only curiosity would be, this is not a criticism, this is just curiosity. Patrick can be a little peculiar. He does not suffer fools well, any way you want to put it. And when it comes to match play, it's clear that Sam Burns and Scottie Scheffler are best friends. They vacation together. That was always easy. Even when things went wrong on the golf course, they're always happy to be around each other. My worry is, if things start going poorly tomorrow, how do those two gel? Not from a game standpoint, from a personality standpoint. On the other side, again, I think Hideki Matsuyama is in for an inspiring week, and I think Corey Connors in that anchor match is brilliant because he is built for this golf course, and he's built for this format, where he can just go out and bomb it as hard as he possibly can. And he's one of the few players that has some experience here. He played in the 2014 Canadian Open, which was played here as an amateur, played actually halfway well. So I like it more on the international side than I do on the U.S. side, but I think it's going to be the match of the day.
I'm with you. I think internationals probably have an edge on this one. I guess the only open question would be Hideki Matsuyama's back. We saw what he'd done over the last 2 months of the season, bronze medal at the Olympics, goes ahead and wins in Memphis. It was in good position after day one at the BMW Championship, tweaks his back, pulls out, and did not have his best stuff at the Tour Championship. Hopefully he's in fine form, because Mike Weir is going to need him. He's going to need his Haas to go all five. He's going to need his Haas to play better than he has in the President's Cup in the past, and hopefully the hometown hero and Corey Connors can bring that out of him. I think you make a great point that I had not previously thought about Cantlay and Burns. Cantlay being sort of a dour presence that works with Xander Schauffele, who burns pretty hot, at least internally. Sam Burns quiet as well on the golf course. Something in the statisticians must have loved that one. They're both above average putters on the PGA Tour, should at least give themselves some opportunity. I think selfishly I'm hoping for a Hideki Matsuyama, Corey Connors win on that one, just to keep what I think would probably on paper be certainly an edge to the Americans. How do you see this one score-wise shaping up after day one?
I mean, we're going to twist ourselves around and keep talking in circles. I can see a scenario, however, where the internationals come out ahead. Again, this is totally dependent on the two things that you and I have leaned into. And I started yesterday leaning into this on live from you, sort of came in behind me today and did the exact same thing, where if Adam Scott, and to a lesser degree, Jason Day and Hideki Matsuyama, if they don't produce for the international side, I don't care how well the Canadians play or the Koreans play. You have to get production out of the top end of your lineup. If not, you're not going to have a chance. And my concern here is that we're going to end up with something along the lines of 2.5 to 2.5. And even though that's probably not a bad scenario for Mike Weir at this point, you need to do much better in this format. Because as I pointed out, going into Friday, alternate shot, when it comes head-to-head, they are awful compared to the Americans. And by that, I mean they have been outscored in that format in the history of this event by 33 points. And so there's a reason why Mike Weir wanted to start with four ball. He has to get off to a good start. He has to have a lead after day one. But I see a scenario more so than one side winning and one side losing, where if you don't end up 2.5 to 2.5, it's 3 to 2, and it doesn't really help him out that much.
I agree with you there. Rex, how about the players who are sitting out? That's going to be Max Homa, Brian Harman on the American side, Siwoo Kim, and Mackenzie Hughes on the international side. If you're Jim Furyk, and you brought Max Homa on this team for a 7-1-1 record, and you do not play him in the format in which you're – obviously, you're going to be playing your own ball. You can get into a rhythm. You can make some birdies. You can also get away with some mistakes. Are you planning to play him on Friday? Are you sitting him until the weekend? Like, what are you going to do with Max Homa, who is clearly not in his best form right now?
Well, it sends a message, and this is my curiosity when it comes into this, because a good captain – and this goes back to the Ryder Cup in 2012, when our colleague, Paul McGinley, sat Graham McDowell in the afternoon on Saturday. And Graham really wanted to play and was playing well. And as a good captain, he convinced Graham long before they got to Saturday, look, I'm only playing you in the morning, and this is why. And the reasoning was, I need you at 100% on Sunday, because I'm going to put you at the back end of the lineup, and I need you to bring every ounce of energy. And it got Graham wanting to run through a wall. It's a really cool story when you hear Paul tell it. If Jim has set up a scenario where Max understands why you're going to sit today, you may even sit Friday, but I'm going to need you on the weekend, because that's when the emotion needs to be ratcheted up the most. So save all your energy and save all of those fist pumps for Saturday and come through. I'm not quite sure that's the message he's sending, because from the outside, it's a lot easier for you and I and everyone else in this media center to look at that and be like, oh, Max isn't playing well. And he hasn't been playing well all season, and there's been nothing to show Jim since he's been here at Royal Montreal that he's turned things around. That would be a terrible message to send.
It most certainly would be a terrible message to send. If you were going to play Max Homa over these first couple of days, why would you not put him in four balls? Why would you not put him in a chance to get a rhythm instead?
In a format he and Harman, who are clearly going to play together,
yep,
have had a lot of success when. So with that, I mean, if you're going to, yeah, if I we're mean, going to give out grades before the matches even start, I think that's where Jim's grade is going to take a hit.
Yeah, Harma and Homa went 2-1 together last year in Rome. Again, putting him potentially in a format in which it's really difficult to get to a rhythm, much more stress and emphasis on putting the ball in play was certainly curious. All right, prediction time. Man of the match. Does it need, how about this? MVP. Because man of the match sort of feels like it has to be on the winning team. Give me the best player on the American side and give me the best player on the international side.
I mean, I can't come up with a scenario that Scottie Scheffler isn't that guy. He's done everything else this year. And again, you can point out his
record.
But
he has struggled. He has struggled the last 2 years in Cups.
And I pointed this out yesterday as well. He has, but he's a vastly different player than he was 2 years ago at this event in Charlotte. He's even a vastly different player than he was a year ago at the Ryder Cup in Rome. And it's specifically because of the work that he's done with Phil Kenyon. I had a chance to talk with Phil tonight after they got done working, and they're right around the one-year anniversary. And Phil sort of ruminated briefly on the idea that, yeah, like, he's come a long way. He's bought in. He has a level of confidence that wasn't there before. You can see it in his play. And I think that's trickled down to every aspect of his game. You look at all the things he's done this season, and Carl Banks on the desk sort of ran through his list of accolades, everything he's won, the majors, the gold medal, everything out. And then you factor in, he's actually gone through quite a bit of adversity too. I think he is such not only a different player, but a different person. So I don't know, unless he has some sort of complete meltdown this week, how he's not the man of the match or the MVP, whatever you want to call him.
It certainly would be a fitting capstone to what has been a sensational year, probably the best year we've seen on the PGA Tour in at least 15 years. My match, man of the match, or MVP for the American side, is going to be Xander Schauffele, getting out from sort of the shadow of Patrick Cantlay, doing it on his own. I think he has an opportunity to flash just how special of a player he is, sort of established himself in sort of that alpha role that maybe we don't see Xander Schauffele being. I think Tony Finau would certainly be a good partner if he teams up with a Colin Morikawa in foursomes. I think Xander Schauffele is going to have a very good week. Would not surprise me at all. 4-1, or perhaps even a little bit better. Again, keep an eye on Russell Henley. I'm hoping he gets the opportunity to play four matches, if not five. I think he could surprise a lot of folks. I'm not quite willing to say he's going to be MVP, Rex, but I do think
he's best newcomer, though.
To, I see that, folks, for sure.
Best newcomer. 100%.
How about international MVP? What you got?
I think when, and again, you and I had fun today doing this dog thing. And look, as inspired as Tom Kim was last year or 2 years ago in this event, I'm not quite sure his game is in the same position. I think it's finally Hideki's time. I think Mike Weir is going to put him in the best possible scenario.
It better
be. To succeed. And I also look at the idea that he's playing really, really good golf. Not only did he win a medal at the Olympics, then he won a playoff event in Memphis, and he has just been on a roll ever since then. I think for the first time in his career coming into this, everything seems to be falling into place. And you're right, there's a back issue, and they're going to need him to go five matches. There's no way around that. Like, they're going to need him to go five matches and something close to 5-0. 4-1 might do it. 5-0 would be much better. So I'm leaning towards Hideki in this.
I like that pick. If you're Mike Weir, you better hope that Hideki Matsuyama has his best stuff this week at Royal Montreal. Perhaps my pick for MVP on the international team is maybe a little bit sentimental. I'm going Adam Scott as the MVP. He is desperate, Rex, to finally win a President's Cup for this international team. And I think he certainly has the form to back it up, sort of the confidence that he has. He said himself that he really wants to have a good performance this week at Royal Montreal, whether that's 4-1 or potentially going 5-0. His job this week is to be a veteran presence in that team room, sure. But his job this week is to put points on the board. I think Ben Mouli can sort of bring out the best in Adam Scott. And again, as we've mentioned a couple times, the only path for international victory is to have great weeks from Hideki, Adam Scott, and Sung J.M. and hope on the American side that those top three certainly falter. Final score prediction is what and why?
I think it's close. I think it's closer than it has been really in recent years. We're talking a point, maybe 2 points. I think we ended up with a scenario where Sunday afternoon is exciting for more for the reasons than we were last time around. Like it was only excited last time in 2007 because it was Mike Weir and Tiger Woods and it had been long over. So I'm seeing something in the 1 to 2 point range. That's 14.5 to 15.5, something in that area. And I do think the Americans still win because I do think, like on paper and in real life, they're clearly the better team. So barring some sort of unprecedented collapse on the side of America's top players, I still think they have the weight, the strength, the moxie, whatever it is you want to call it, to finish this thing off. But I do think it's closer. I do think there is some parity for the first time in a long time.
2015, last match on the golf course. 2019, internationals led. Yeah. Heading into Sunday singles, I would be shocked if this is a blowout, as some have predicted, just based on the strength of that American top portion. I'm with you. 15.5 to 14.5, maybe a tie. I would be stunned if this was anything more. A tie would be horrible. I'm just saying a tie is not out of the realm of possibilities. I don't see anything more than 16-14 on either side. 5 hours later, Rex, after thinking that the internationals could win, I'm back that I don't think it's going to happen. After seeing the Thursday pairings, knowing how important Thursday is going to be for the internationals, I have a hard time visualizing anything like a 4-1 start, which I think the internationals would really need to sort of pull out that 16-14 type victory. Again, I'd be stunned if this is not a close match. And again, that's probably not going to soothe any of the critics of this, who said that this is a nothing event, this is boring. How can you have a matchup in which one team dominates all of them? I'm with you, but I do think it's going to be close. I do think it's going to be competitive. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill, nbcsports.com/golf. We have plenty of content up on the site for the remainder of the week. We will also, folks, have mini pods each and every day at the President's Cup. Keep in mind, the action starts at 11:35 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday. It's not the Friday start like you see with the Ryder Cup, 4 days of competition, unless, like in 2017, it almost ends on Saturday. So Rex and I will have a mini podcast Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and the full recap pod on Sunday. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys on Thursday night after the opening day of the President's Cup.
They're making poor Johnson Wagner hit a driver now.